Blog Talk Radio.
Shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports Index.
And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good doctor.
If I'm showing up every week, this will be fighting. John King has a very great card fighting. Tom Green's has a great champion is fighting. They talk about a fight happening in December. The Barclays Center. And tomorrow, Cotto and Alvarez will agree to their fight. But tonight, we invade the camps. What the champs? And some of the trainers have been champs themselves. It's worth it. Wild Sox Radio on the Tustin Charger. And it works. Iconic as they make, Mark the Golden Boy, walkaway champion of the world, Golden Glove. A product, like another great champion, Buddy McGirt, of the Kid Glove Program, brought to you by the late great John Francis Xavier Conner. Buddy, too, a Golden Glove, a world champion, and a guy Although an elite champion, always wanted to be a trainer. Abel Sampson, senior man of trainers, as well as the first and only Alabama matchmaker at Madison Square Garden, Harold Weston Jr., who won the only MSG welterweight championship this year. Hoping to get a hold of Marion D. Boston, greatest boxing show of all time, Boston of Boxing. Mike Melody, he's put at Rick Sports, and the man who brought you the number one radio show on boxing. What happened to be historically the first African American quarterback in the history of Staten Island football. Little me is here. Hey, if you don't think you don't call it, the referee extraordinaire now moving on into high heights, due to Hall of Fame. Hey, Pat, looking to possibly get maybe David Jones, and also maybe we'll get Dusty to the grip of Pickle Kick. But you know, here's Sports and Death, we start off, we're always looking into John Coltrane. It's by Miles C. Jason. The iconic key. You go. Bow your head. Hey, take your hats off. Stop walking, stop talking. Stay hot. That's the clue you can. Stop. It's the greatest piece of you. It ain't had a trick over the back. It's the greatest piece. Come around. You can go hot around New York City. But cool in the game. We'll close out. Don't tell K. We'll bring us in and then. You can take the chance. But in the dirt, Mark Freeland, Abel Sanchez, Capo, Wrestling Jr., Eddie Cotton, and of course, Boxer, among others, to MSG. Yes. Okay. So, close it out there. Okay. Lord. We thank you for another day. More importantly, the Lord, we thank you for little things you so largely took for granted. We thank you for this morning's getting up, last night's laying down. We thank you for your grace and mercy. Grace is getting what you don't deserve, and mercy is not getting what you do deserve. We just take this time out, the Lord, to pay homage to you. And thank you for all great and moving something. And we ask these blessings in the name of your Son. And we simply say, amen. And thank you. Listen to that Cool in the Gang piece. I remember those Apollo shows. Oh, wow. They had a show one night. Nancy Wilson, Cool in the Gang, and the headline was Richard Pryor. Wow. I think it cost about maybe $20 then. But some of the Buddy McGirt is here with us, and we're looking for GW Mike Harold Weston Shipping. Harold, are you getting here, Harold? Harold Weston here? Harold?
Yeah, I'm there.
Harold Weston is here. I got Buddy McGirt, and I'm looking for GW Mike. Abel Sanchez will be joining us soon. Mark Whelan, is Mark in town? Mark, you here with your Mark? Mark Whelan here yet? Okay. All right, well, Buddy, you are out there on the coast. Don King has got a fight card happening this Saturday, and you're training the heavyweight. How's things going in camp there, Buddy? It's always a pleasure to hear from you.
Everything's great, baby.
Mm-hmm. Buddy, you were amazing. I remember we talked one time. You said you always, because Buddy was the first show I ever did on Sports and Up on Blake Radio was Buddy. And you said you always wanted to be a trainer, right, Buddy?
Yes, sir. I would say the day I started boxing, 2 days later, I wanted to be a trainer.
How did that happen, Buddy? What, you decide you don't want to fight no more, or did you just
really I just love the idea of teaching somebody and watching them, excel and be successful. But you know, I love fighting at the time more, so that's what I dedicated my time to, being a fighter. And then, but I've always had that goal to be a trainer in my mind.
You know, it was said that you were the one who prolonged the career of Vittorio Gatti, and you kind of dispelled that rumor that you can't teach your old dog new tricks, as you did teach him some new boxing skills that made him, without question, the human highlights film. It's been something that touched us deeply, you know, with his passing. But you and him had a special bond, and I think that's what's important in all trainers, besides the ability to train and teach, but buddy, the trust. That I think trainers and fighters have to have a trust, correct?
I mean, if the fighter don't trust you, he's not going to listen to you as much as he should. You know, he might be a little skeptical. Your relationship will only, you know, their success will only go but so far.
How are you coming in, Al?
I believe that trust is very important.
Yeah, and Al, you talked about that with Gil Clancy, the trust and the relationship you had with both him and your dad.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing that they didn't say I did not believe, and everything they did say was right. So, I mean, you know, the bottom line was I believed in them, and I was, you know, I'm successful at getting out of the ring and being physically in place and accomplishing the things I have accomplished in life, and so I have no qualms at all. I mean, they told me what to do, and I did what they said to do, and everything worked out well.
Eddie got here with us? Eddie, did you join us here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Eddie, you know these guys quite well. Howard Weston joined us. Buddy McGirt, looking for Mark Breland and Abel Sanchez to join us. You know, as a guy that's in the ring, Eddie, I guess you've seen that. I remember you told me some quotes at the... Emmanuel used, and as Harold said, and as Buddy said, it's a frustration of teaching and also a trust and a bond there, Eddie.
Yeah, that's right. Both Harold and Buddy, they're old school. That's how I grew up with my father. My father said something, I did it. He always was right. I followed his leadership. And that's what I've tried to set the example for my son. Unfortunately, my son, sometimes he don't listen. He want to go down that road and get bumps on his head and then come back. But see, Harold and Buddy, they're old school.
No, I say old school is the best school. That's a great saying. Blessed is the man who can learn from others. You know, if they tell you don't go down that block because there's a pit bull that might bite you, you don't go down there. We've got another caller. I've got Eddie, I've got Harold, I've got Buddy, and who else I got here? I'm not checking with you. 347-739-3343.
That's me, Doc.
Okay, Mike Bowley, say something, baby. Speak up.
Okay. I'm doing a conversation, Doc.
You know what? Yeah, but Mike Bowley always does it. But Mike, you know, you had to me the greatest boxing show of all time, the W Boxing Report. And you know, I'm curious, you know, when I shoot these names at you, Mike, the names that you respect, and to me, Hall of Fame names, Buddy McGirt, Howard Weston Jr., Eddie Cotton. Mike, we've said this so often, and Howard has been a big proponent of this, and Eddie, and Buddy, I think you've seen this too, and you, I think if you, Mark, we did not have to and you talked about how there are three who have diamonds in the rough and know nothing about this sport. He said, you know, Emmanuel Stewart should be in the corner, very magnified. Mike, we're looking at the game now. Guys won't fight each other. So-called elite trainers, how far back has the game gone in your mindset, as opposed to, you know, from yesteryear and now, Mike?
I mean, the way it used to be, guys would fight each other. I think now everyone's fighting just to keep their title, you know, or maintain their position.
We've got, you know, something I want us guys to hit on, and I don't want to start with Hal because he may not stop. Floyd Mayweather Jr., unquestionably, best fighter around, maybe one of the best fighters of all time. He picks the top five list, and then this is subjective to how he feels, how he thinks. But he has a top five list, Mike, and Sugar Ray Robinson is not on that list.
Mel, let's stop all that, okay? I mean, I'm gonna throw out two names right off the bat and squash this in the bud. Ampryor, and Alessis Coguelo. Okay, he couldn't be neither one of them, and he'd have got knocked out by each one of them. Let's end it right there. And they both was in his weight class.
I'm looking at the list, Al. I'm looking at the list, Mike. Buddy, I mean, it's no question. Buddy beats him. Marvin, I'm looking at the list. He got himself first. And I said, you know what? Okay, so he has a mild attack of lunacy. He puts Duran number two. And I said, well, hold on. Now I'm befuddled now. Because maybe he's doing a thing where, with Ali number five, there's he's doing small guys. Then he's got Pernell Whitaker, Harold. He's got Pernell Whitaker and Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. on the list. No Ray Robinson. No Jack Jones. I'm like, wow. I mean, Jack Johnson. I said after reading that list, gentlemen, I said, it is now without question that Floyd Mayweather Jr. has taken more punches than we have acknowledged. Have a top five list like that. I mean, to have a top five list like that, and I think the thing that was even more compelling was the lack of consciousness of history, which I'm not stunned with, but to have no Henry Armstrong, to have no Sugar Ray Robinson, to have no Joe Louis, to have no Jack Johnson, it's quite evident that something that there's. Mike, there's something wrong with this young man. No.
He didn't have a Sugar Ray Leonard there, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had nobody. And you know, I just think, you know, let's go through this. And Buddy, we'll just start with you. Mayweather, outstanding fighter. And Harold has said for the longest time, there's too many guys in your era that would have beat him. This kid, the number one fighter in the world, all that kind of stuff, he would have been a contender. Maybe he wins the title. Maybe he doesn't. How good is he, Buddy, in your opinion? Is he overrated? Your thoughts on Floyd Mayweather, Jr.?
I'm going to put it like this. He's the best now in this era because there's no one around, which is not his fault. But to put him on as the top 20 the best ever, something's got to be wrong with anybody who puts him on that list. I mean, there were some of these great fighting men before my time in the 50s, 60s, even some that never became champion. Man, that were great, great fighters. I just think today, everyone just throws around the word great loosely. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's sad but true.
No, you're right, because you go to a press conference and the guy says, now I want to bring up Henry Gordon, 11-0 with 7 knockouts, and Henry coming up to the podium. Henry comes up, and Henry says, well, now Henry's fighting Joe Johnson, who's 12-0 with 8 knockouts, and he says, well, you know, I'm really honored to be fighting a great fighter. God's got 12 fights. God's got 12 fights. You got 11 fights, and you talk about great. I mean, guys, you're right. And I remember at the 1997 All-Star game, Oscar Robertson talked about the fact that in our society, nobody is conscious of the pioneers and the forerunners before them, and that's across the board, sports, doctors, dentists, lawyers, car washers, mechanics, and sad and touching. Buddy, and something that Hal talked about too, and you were trying to, you're looking for your fighter to be at his best on fight night. one of the things you have to do to make sure that he doesn't exceed what you want, or there are times you have to tell him, hey, you know what, don't come to the gym tomorrow. Is he ahead of pace sometimes? Does that happen sometimes, buddy?
Well, you know, I just think today fighting is just, it's a whole different breed, man. You can't really explain it unless you're in the gym and see it. It's a whole different breed. I mean, when I walk in the gym, and I know how and all of this, when you walk in the gym, you never ask your trainer who was you boxing today and what was you doing. You just get dressed and do whatever you think you can do. I mean, that's how guys teach me to look at the other guy's gloves. Hey, what are these gloves for? You only scrunch. I mean, you know, if you back in the day, you walk in the club, square gym, I mean, you had to glove up and be ready to run. I mean, if you wouldn't ask the questions, the coach would say that he's out of the gym. But the respect level back then was so high. I mean, I remember as a 19-year-old sitting in Howard Weston's office for almost 2 hours, and Howard Weston educated me on the football game. You don't have that no more, man. You know, you get guys today that are meeting a guy like Howard, they're trying to tell Howard.
I guess you can second that motion.
Well, you know, one thing I look at the whole thing and I just realize that I can walk around with pride, and then they can walk around with being who they are but not really being nothing, because of the fact that, you know, them fighting whoever they want to fight and everything is not the right way of saying that you're the best boxer in the world. Being the best boxer in the world, when you fight anybody that walks into your weight class, and you're not scared to fight them anywhere, any place, any time. But today's time, like Buddy said, these guys, they want to do it their way, and they're going to tell you how many rounds they're going to box and how many, you know, what they're going to do. And it doesn't, you know, you deal with it because they might have talent. And the other thing is a lot of money in the sport more than it was back in the day. So basically, these guys just do what they want to do, but they're really not real accomplishing fighters in the long run. But like Buddy said, what they got today out there, they're great. So Mayweather can say he's one of the greatest of all times of today, but not of all times of boxing. Simple as that. That's come Ray Lennon and Tommy Hearns, and everybody looked at him, and I look at him like he's crazy. But we know that he didn't ever fight the best. And we know what we did to his daddy and his uncle, so we know how good they were, okay?
Yeah, you so often said, Hal, that he's so much a clone of their styles and their mechanics. I mean, I think you even said that he thought at his best, even his uncle was a better fighter than he was. We're talking about Roger Mayweather. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Roger was much better than his father. Roger was much better. Roger was more offense, and his father was more defense.
Mm-hmm. Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio, on the Custom Guard Network. We are invading the camps, looking for Mark Breland to join us, as well as Abel Sanchez. Okay, buddy, who are you training? And the fight is on Saturday. It's a Don King card, right? Am I correct?
It's Friday night. It's a heavyweight out of Philadelphia, New Jersey.
We want to talk about Gotti. You know, he was such a big star. I think you did so much. What was it about him that you had to change that elevated his game, buddy?
Well, basically, it was just reminding him of what he can do, what he got away from. You know, early in his career, he was a good boxer. But once he started scoring those good points and knockouts, and the crowd was going crazy, he started going for that. And he said, listen, man, if you want to go a few more years, you can't achieve this. You can't continue to fight like this. If you're going to fight like this, you ain't going to last.
Mm-hmm.
It's common sense. I mean, you know, you ask if it's right. So, that's it. You know, he likes to play golf. That's the difference. When you get them bummed, would you rather go play golf or go back to the hotel and put ice on your face? He said, I want to play golf. I said, move your damn head when you need the ring. It's that simple. It's not rocket science.
Wow. Hey, you know, looking back at, I'm pretty sure you refereed a couple of his fights. Well, what was it like refereeing a fight by Gotti? Did you ever referee in his fights, Eddie?
No. But I was always made proud. It seemed like I always fought his card. But he was a very exciting fighter because, I mean, you knew that it was going to be a fight. That's what fans want to see. And somebody was probably going to go down. And then, you know, it was a fight. And I think that when Buddy came along, Buddy helped him with his defense also because, you know, Gotti always had a problem with getting hit with punches. And once Buddy picked him up, I noticed that there was a little bit more head movement from him. And I think Buddy can attest to that.
And I told these guys, when he throw punches, when you get those sort of punches, what do you think the other guy's going to do? You're going to punch back. Don't wait for him to punch back. You just aim at him.
Right.
It's not right to do that. If you throw a rock at someone, do you hide behind the building or you wait for him to throw a rock back? It says, you hide behind the building. That's all the defense. It's the same damn point. These guys make it rocket science.
His most memorable fight, Doc, to me, was when he fought Ivan Robinson.
Yeah. At the Garden. At the old farm.
Yeah, he fought Robinson, and in Atlantic City, too.
Yeah. He had beat Tracy Patterson for the title, and Patterson, the son of Floyd Patterson, they became the first ever father and son duo to win a world championship. And, you know, I look back at those great short form days, watching Buddy and watching Harold and Benitez, I mean Duran, all that. It's just, you know, you're so blessed to see those guys, and it's sad and touching, Harold, using your classic line, man, when you look at these guys in the words of Marion Boykin, perpetrating the fraud. Buddy, is there a difference in training a lightweight fighter and a guy, I mean, okay, but we're talking about 135, 147, I think you're saying heavyweight. Is there a difference, or is it basically the same kind of mechanics you got to go through, a method?
I mean, it all depends on the individual. You know, you get some heavyweights that are athletic, and you get some that are not. But, you know, you got to take what you got and work with it. I mean, you know, so it varies. You know, it all depends on the individual. That's the best way to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these guys can't work in two bubbles at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harold, you remember, Buddy, you I believe, aren't you a kid gloves product?
No, let me tell you, me and Harold, when I turned pro, I fought the kid gloves, but Harold was the promoter. Harold was running Madison Square Garden back in the early 80s, and I was better than that. So Harold was responsible for building my career in the beginning. You know, I should fight for full form, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, Al Weston was the promoter. And that's why when he used to leave the gym in Jersey, some days I'd go stop by his office at the Garden and sit and pick his brain.
Every day, buddy. Say every day, okay?
He would entertain me on the game. I was young. I was 18, 19 years old. So I was sitting in his office, man. You know, he was one of the gazelles. He'd be sitting back, and he'd give it to me straight. He didn't pull no punches with me, and, you know, I thank him for that because it helped me develop to the person I became.
I got to give Buddy credit on that because he was the first guy that used to come to my office, and we used to practice things right there in the office, and he'll go to the gym and work on these combinations or whatever we balance or everything, and he came out very well, you know, as a good fighter. I just remember one fight I put Buddy in, and he had a little doubt about the fight because the fight he was going to fight was pretty good. Who was that kid from, he's from Gleason's gym. What was his name?
Alan Burton.
Yeah. And it was a good matchup because, you know, they both was coming up and everything. But it was a good matchup. And I told Buddy, I said, all you got to do is be in shape and use your jab and keep your balance together and just work it. And you'll be all right. And sure enough, he did it. Well, you stopped him in 9 rounds, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you stopped him in 9 rounds. So that's...
Oh, no. That was Pete Padilla.
Yeah, right. Buddy did real good. That's when you saw Buddy start changing to a better fighter from that point. You knew he was going to be champ of the world from that point on.
Wow. When you talk about the two, how I look at Buddy McGirt, guy is part of that, Hector Camacho, Mark Vidal, Iran Barkley, and then you had so many other exciting guys. You had the Fighting Mailman. You know, you had so many guys who was just a tremendous. How much of the fact that Madison Square Garden stopped promoting fights? I think Harold and Mike and Eddie. I think with Madison Square Garden no longer being, because now it's sad and touching, using the word again, how Madison Garden has no boxing department. How much of that, Buddy, do you think has been part of the deterioration of boxing? I mean, you know,
there's no better place. There's no better place. If you never fought the boxing, you're never short. You know, I mean, that's the mecca, man. Madison Square Garden is the place, man. You know, I think about all those guys, man, that, you know, I mean, God, man. I first met Mike McCullum at the same forum. When he was an amateur, he had a trainer named Rocky D, who passed away. You know what I mean? I remember all those days, man. I don't forget none of that. Even though I had a lot of fights, being with those guys and being around those guys and watching them develop along with myself, you know, I used to take a little bit from everybody, man. You know what I mean? Not too many fighters today get that opportunity. You know what I mean?
Let me just say this about the platform wasn't there for Madison Square Garden, and Buddy can vouch for this. The platform wasn't there, and I wasn't sitting there doing the things that I was doing for all them guys. You would never heard of Buddy McGirt or Iran Barkley or Mark McDowell and all them guys. They were Camacho. They would have never, ever, ever made it. Okay?
Well, you know, they would never. The thing, too, I think, is their acknowledgement of how important the guard was, because I remember, I think Cloud was his name, he was fighting Bernard Hopkins, and at the press conference at the Barclays Center, and I said, well, you know, you're fighting at the Barclays Center, you're in Brooklyn, so I said, evidently, you want to eventually fight at Madison Square Garden. And he said something to me that this was startling. He said, the Barclays Center is the new Madison Square Garden. And I was like, you know, I remember Buck O'Neill said, if you took Yankee Stadium out of the Bronx, it'd no longer be Yankee Stadium. And it's sad and touching how, again, that somebody would think that fighting in the Barclays Center is the equal to fighting in Madison Square Garden. And I'm sort of puzzled by, well, not knowing longer, how, I mean, Ray Leonard only fought there one time. I mean, you, Harold, Buddy, Antifermo, Benitez, Camacho. I mean, the Garden was that was your platform. You guys fought at the Mecca. I mean, you were basically driving a Rolls Royce. Another guy's is driving a Mustang. Here's a guy with a Mustang thinking his as good as a Rolls Royce. But it's sad that guys no longer think of Madison Square Garden as the place to fight. Like Buddy said, if you haven't fought there, you haven't fought anywhere. And I think Mike Bellamy had to leave us. I think Eddie and Buddy, the sad part about it is that these guys have to, when you talk about, they have no sense of history.
They don't know, man. They don't know. Let me tell you, going into the South Forum, you know, man, you should be there. You walk in the employee's entrance. All the old trackers be hanging out there by the employee's entrance. Olympic Gym in New York. And every old trainer act like they needed a ticket, but by 5 pounds they won't win the arena. That's what New York needs more than, man. That was fun and it was educational, man. And if any fighter says different, there's something wrong with it. You remember those days, that's how I met you there, Mel. That's how I met
the phone.
That was the place to be.
And everybody had to come through. And the thing about that too, buddy, is that, you know, you go to the South Forum to watch Buddy McGirt fight, but man, there go Willie Pep in the corner. Wow, there's Arnold Cream, Jersey Joe Walker. Oh man, so you know, everybody gravitated to Madison Square Garden, and I think it's, you know, just like I said, sad and touching. Eddie, I mean, you could dovetail on this too, where. I remember how in your tenure as matchmaker at the Garden, I was talking to one of the PR guys, and he said something to me that was startling, and I didn't catch it for how deep it was. And he said at that particular time that Madison Square Garden was no longer concerned about the boxing department. They didn't care if they had fights or not. I couldn't believe it. They didn't care if they had fights. And that was the beginning of the end of boxing there. I think, you know, it's without saying, when you walked out, the lights went off. And
Mel, what did I tell you? And I think I told Buddy this. I said, when I leave here, the Garden will shut down. And you guys will never have another moment here like you did with me, because it'll be all over. Nobody believed me. I told them. I said, when I leave, the doors will not be open like you think it was going to be open.
You know how? I think two things here. It's not that people didn't believe you. They didn't believe you would leave in wake of the product that you were producing. World champions, Buddy McGirt, world champion, Mark Fidel, world champion Hedrick Camacho, world champion Iron the Blade, the Barkley, okay? And then you had a horde of other outstanding contenders. You had
Buddy became world champion. Look at it. Call the Truth Williams. He fought for the heavyweight championship. Should have been champion when he fought Larry Holmes, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Buddy, I told Buddy this a long time ago. I said, if I pick you, and I put my mind into you, that means you can fight. Every one of those guys, I would not sign up everybody to fight to be a promotional Madison Square Garden. I select certain guys that I pick, that I put my mind to, that I develop as they went on and gave them advice how to make themselves better. And every one of those kids became champion of the world except a kid named Pedro Vieira. And then the reason why he didn't become because I didn't want to take the champion. They wanted us to fight, but his manager took it because of money. But and he lost. But the fact is that he's won, and was Pedro Vieira, and everybody else became champion of the world. Well, Juan Laporte. I mean, you know, I made like Laporte 7 or 8 world
champions. What was it in Buddy that you saw that you knew he was going to be a champion? I mean, you know, what was it in Buddy McGirt that you knew that you had a world champion, you had a gym here? What was it, Al?
He was anxious, and he was determined, and he was dedicated, and all he wanted to do was teach and taught. He really wanted to learn, but one thing I saw, he took time out every day before he jumped on that train to go to Jersey. He came by my office to at least talk an hour about boxing. And that made me realize that he was for real. And then he had talent. He had talent.
Every day, how?
Huh?
He came by your office every day?
Yeah, have it before he went to Jersey, before he went to training in Jersey. He stopped by my office because he had to go downstairs and take the train.
Boy, but you talking about perfect timing. Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio and Trusty Blog. Gentlemen, don't move. Take a quick little break. Miles Davis is going to play Kind of Blue. It was Miles Davis, they said, who told Sugar Ray Robinson after a particular fight, Ray, you got to hang it up, who also was a big fan of Howard Western Jr. Don't move. Funny majority is here. Eddie Cotton is here. Howard Western Jr. is here. From Ray Sanchez and Mark Breeden. Don't move. Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio and Invasion Champ Stamps here on Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio on the Trusty Guard Radio Network. Mr. Miles Davis, play with some for us, would you? I'm looking for Miles to join us. You know, there was an interesting thing the other day. I was going to talk about this before we left. And what I did, I did a Temptation piece. And I was reading where the Temptations had a trilogy. I think we all remember You're My Everything, followed by the classic I Wish It Would Rain, and then they had the third part of the trilogy was I Could Never Love Another. Well, I think Buddy McGurk had to leave us, looking for Abel Sanchez and Mark Whelan to join us, and maybe we'll have to catch them at a later time. But, you know, Eddie and Harold, I was looking at this plane download on YouTube, and they said, well, You're My Everything, Kenny Pendergrass was the guy who wrote the song, and he wrote it in tribute to his wife. You're My Everything, you surely must know Magic Girl, because you changed my life. It was dull and ordinary, and then after finding out that she cheated on him, he wrote the classic too, I Wish It Would Rain, Sunshine, Blue Sky. Well, he forgave her, decided he couldn't leave her, and he came out with the third classic, I Could Never Love Another After Loving You. After all three songs went number one, all three songs were published, he committed suicide. Now, it's just, you know, when you hear these songs, My Girl, written by Smokey Robinson, which Smokey wrote, and he picked David Ruffin to lead the song, and Smokey wrote that song, and salute to his wife, who at the time had suffered a miscarriage, you know. And so it was just amazing, because Smokey had also wrote the classic for Mary Wells, My Guy. So Smokey wrote My Guy, My Girl, and Otis Williams said, man, in any venue, still conscious that Temptation didn't sing My Girl, he says, man, all hell broke loose, man. So they already had to play My Girl. And David Ruffin was the lead singer on that one, and that was the first million seller across the board. Sports at Blog Talk Radio on Trust and Guard. Now, we're trying to get some music for you, but we seem to be having some problem with our... Okay. Well, okay, so we got audio. That's the main thing. Anything here. Eddie, Harold, got a big fight coming up here. Triple G. Abel Sanchez is supposed to be joining us. How is Triple G as good as they make him out to be? He's supposed to be the guy that everybody's scared of. He's supposed to be the best middleweight in the world. How? Because, you know, double barrel Harold comes out with it straight back to the back. And Eddie will be next. How good is Triple G? Is he the best middleweight in the world, Harold?
I mean, with all these scared fighters out here today, I guess he is. I mean, basically, you got fighters that are scared of each other. They don't want to fight each other, and really, they can't fight. And so, basically, right now, he's the best thing that's out there. I mean, you know, he's very well schooled. He listens in good shape, and you know, he's a guy that's going to come at you, and he's going, you know, you got to outbox him or outfight him or whatever you got to do, but he's not scared to fight anybody, but that's good.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I've had him twice, and he's knocked guys out both times. He stopped this guy named Macklin with a body shot in the third or fourth round. And like Harold said, you know, he puts a lot of pressure on people. He punches hard with both hands. He's shifty and he comes at you. And like Hal said, these guys don't want to, you know, take him on for the chance that they may take a loss and they may miss out on a title shot with one of the other three or four sanctioning bodies. So yes, I think he's the best thing out there right now.
Mhm. Wow. And he's got a fight coming to the Garden. You know anything about this Canadian guy he's gonna be fighting? Destiny Blows will be joining us pretty soon. Looking for Destiny to join us here on Sports and Depth along with Howard West and Eddie Cotton. So we're looking for Destiny to join us. He's in the studio right now. He'll be joining us pretty soon. Will you know anything about the Canadian guy that's going to be fighting, Eddie?
Yeah. I've seen the guy fight one time. He's got a real good record. He's something like 32-2 with 31 knockouts. He's a puncher. It's just that I don't know what his defensive skills are, and that's going to take a lot, I think, to get through Triple G. So you know, somebody's going to get knocked out.
Yeah, well, I've got some people. The theory is, if it's an early knockout, it'll be the Mew, and if it's a late knockout, it'll be Triple G. But the betting line is that the fight will not go 12 rounds.
Yeah, I mean, Doc, they made this kind of fight because basically neither guy can draw. And it's a good fight. I mean, if it was...
Wow, that's amazing how, you know, you bring up this, you know, when you listen to Sports and Depth, you see things, you don't hear many players. And it's amazing how, and I said what was amazing about this, too, when you bring up a point that validates your expertise in this game, because Triple G, supposedly the most feared middleweight, Triple G, one of the top fighters in the world, doesn't draw. And this here, finally, with this guy, this is his first pay-per-view fight. Is this a mistake, how doing pay-per-view, or should they stay HBO or ESPN on it?
If they do 300,000 or 400,000 people to see him, that's a blessing. Okay, simple as that. That's a blessing. They ain't gonna get no million that's gonna pay in to see it, because nobody knows really who Triple G is. Really, I mean, he doesn't have that marquee name that you're gonna identify with, like you would say with Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather. So basically, you know, he doesn't. They're trying to make him like that kind of superstar, but he doesn't have that marquee, and so basically he's not gonna be the draw of a pay per view. They're giving him this opportunity right now because I guess him and his people have been squawking because he is such a good little fighter. But at the same time, it's not a fight that the world is talking about. And so basically, it's not really a pay-per-view fight, but they're just doing it as a favor and hoping that, you know, people are drawing, of Triple G's a Russian, right? What is he? He's a Russian, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're hoping that the Russian, you know, Russian population will plug into him and be a big draw for him. That's what they're hoping for.
The promotion said that they sold out as soon as they started talking about the fight. They sold 6,000 tickets. So I don't know what that means. I don't know how big the place is, but that was a good sign. So the paper added, I don't know what that means. So, you know,
6,000 and you got an arena that holds what, 15,000-20,000 people?
19,000.
Well,
the promo was
you're gonna put that in over there in the felt form or something like that.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see. Plus, you know, the thing too was interesting, if it's a pay per view fight. A lot of people might have said, well, Dad, you know, I'd rather spend me, you, and Dusty could get together and split the $49 a piece and stay home instead of buying the 24-hour ticket and going to, you know, the front point. Because, you know, you got to park the car. That's going to cost you $40 to park across the street, okay? Anything you get to drink in there is going to be astronomical. But why is he not... I remember Marvin Hagler talked about that. And I said, you know, there's certain guys who don't draw. And there's certain guys who have their clientele. You were a guy that had your clientele, Hal. You know, Durant, Ali, guys who don't. Why does he not draw, Hal? I mean, he's an outstanding fighter, right?
Well, I think because of the fact they didn't market him right. And they didn't know how to market him. I mean, a lot of the fighters out there today is, you know, you got a couple of kids that's marketable, but these guys that so-called knows boxing, they don't know how to market these fighters right to make them a draw. And so basically that's the reason why the people don't know nothing about them. And when they try to display them and they try to,